I didn't have a chance to see who's presenting. Bruce Brown is presenting.
Michael Jenkins.
And Michael Jenkins. Okay, you're meeting them as I meet them. So our next speakers, I won't try to read the title. It's very long, but something about cultural comparison for various kinds of things.
Well, while Michael gets this set up, let me just give you a little bit of introduction to what we're up to here. About 2.5 years ago, we had some government funding to do some work on homeland security, Pacific Rim and Middle Eastern languages and how names operate, cross-cultural comparisons, things like in China you can identify geolocation 70% correct from the full name, which of course can't do in America. We're now expanding this to European and South Latin American, and we're using it mostly as an opportunity to do mentoring with students to teach them how to do to use the tools of doing psychological research, but looking specifically at subjective properties of names. And I'm not sure we fit here. We gave a presentation last year, and I was thinking, I'm not sure we fit here, and I'm still not sure we do, but we'll show you what we did and let you help us figure it out. We think of this as kind of like a proof of concept. Michael Jenkins did a great deal of the work that you're now about to see.
As he said, we're expanding this research to France, Brazil, and Germany in specific, and comparing it to the American data that we had acquired as well to just kind of see different trends. Let's see. So the way that we got the names was, for the American names, was just basically all the people in the research group provided their 4 generations, history, and then we use that as a database. We also used a similar method with the foreign students. Some of them were actually kind of hard to find, so we've actually gone ourselves to familysearch.org and just found some random names in different areas so that we can have a more stratified sample. And we also used our family and friends who are avid genealogists as well. And then what we did is we took those names and we reduced the names to like a non-redundant list to get, some names are more common than others. And so we reduced them down to about 50 names per gender. And then we had the respondents rate those on 7 adjective pairs. And you can see here there was informal, formal, old-fashioned and modern, unfamiliar and familiar, unusual, popular, undistinguished, distinguished, and unattractive and attractive. And the idea behind this is just to try and see, depending on how they rate this, can we determine whether, where they came from, are they male or female, and what decade they came from. Previously we've done, we actually had the raters actually judge, have a judged idea of, whether they were male or female, their location, and their decade. But currently we're just trying to focus more on where, if we can judge where they sit in this space here to from these adjective pairs to help us out with that. So here's the scatterplot correlation from our first study. And so you can see here, this is actual decade and judge decade by the raters for female names. And you can see here there's a correlation coefficient of 0.68. And so R squared is, it accounts for about 47% of the variance here. So there's a very, very high correlation, comparatively for the female names just by just looking at the name and judging, when they were born. For the male names, it wasn't quite as significant. There's a coefficient of 0.51, but the R squared, we only account for 26% of that. So, and then here's a lens model bar graph of what is showing. And so you can easily see that it's far easier for us to just look at the female names and judge the decade than it is for the male names. With the male names only, a third is mediated, whereas the female names half is mediated. This is a metrica that we use to analyze some of the data. As you can see here, there's the different factors here. You have, distinguished, formal, and complex. The shortened vectors here are actually coming at you in this three-dimensional space. And then you can see how, you know, some of the factors are closer related than others. And so then when we come here and plot this, this is actually some female names that we've done. And each one of those balls represents a raider. And, you know, and each color represents a different name. And so you can see how the different names are rated. This center point is the average of those ratings. And so you can see where they kind of sit in those. And so you can see, like, Flossie's, you know, if you go back here, you know, you have modern, you know, distinguished, formal, complex, attractive, popular, and familiar. Wrong way. You know, you have Alpha, and, you know, somebody really didn't like her name over here. You know, whereas some of these other names up here were seen as more formal, more, you know, likable. And so that gives us kind of a visual understanding of what's going on. For the gender comparisons for American data, you can kind of see also how those fit in here. You know, the female names are, you know, definitely more, are the blue line, actually, and the male names are the pink line. So you can see that the male were judged to be way more formal and distinguished than the female names, but they were both, you know, generally familiar and about the same as, you know, modern and attractive on that. And then for the German data, you know, it's pretty similar here. You're seeing everything kind of flows pretty much along the same line. You know, the female here are pink, so you're seeing they're a little bit more, viewed a little bit more attractively than the male names, but not really. There's more of a continual kind of flow there. For the decade comparisons for American female data, interestingly enough, we found here, as you can see, the 1820 names are actually viewed as more familiar, more popular than, you know, the 1970, 1990 names right here. So we found that kind of interesting to see how, you know, people view the names. Actually, some of these older names are coming back and being viewed as more popular, when in fact they're the older names. And then in the decade comparisons for the male data, you can also see, you know, here that, you know, 1990, 1970 are up where they should be, unfamiliar and popular, but 1820 is still hanging right up there with them, you know, as far as the decade goes. For the decade comparison for the German data, here, this 1980 data is really quite interesting. Talking with one of the informants about that time in Germany, they went really wild with the names. They decided to kind of go, you know, shorter names. So you can see that here it's less formal, less distinguished, but all of a sudden they're, you know, more familiar and more modern. They kind of jumped away from that. And we didn't have any newer names in 1980, but she mentioned that they've actually gone back away from that and are coming back to more to this trend that you're seeing here with all these other names, where most of them are more formal and distinguished, yet, you know, less familiar and modern. So here's the location comparisons for the American data. And as you can see, the ones that were viewed as more popular and familiar were the Pacific Coast, you know, California. We kind of view that as these names are the more interesting names, you know, whereas this other over here, which was, you know, I think it was, we had some coming from Canada. They kind of came up from there, or just, you know, other places, and they just, you know, were not, you know, familiar at all, but were way more formal. So that just gives you a kind of an understanding of where those names were coming in. And then for the German data, again, we're finding that it's not so distinguished as the American data. They're finding a lot more of these. They're just closer together as far as, you know, how they're viewed, you know, formal and distinguished. I'm not really familiar with Germany at all, so I don't really know where Michael Schwinn is or Bayern, and I'm sure I'm hashing those names. But that, if you understand where those places are at, it kind of gives you an understanding of what we're finding, you know, how those are viewed. So basically what we're saying is, you know, I guess in being here, what could be of interest is that these names are often cyclic, you know, and that, you know, especially in my family, as I went and did my, you know, genealogy, there's, you know, 100 Williams, you know, and so in trying to go back when you hit these holes in your genealogy, this kind of gives you an understanding of, you know, what to look for, and to give you a little bit more of a statistical understanding of how likely that is to do that. If we can kind of, you know, narrow it down and see how these names are viewed on these seven adjective pairs, we can kind of get a better understanding to see if, you know, to narrow things down to find those things. And I think that's it. Are there any questions? Yes. Our judges were the same people that we had fill them out were the judges. So for our American names, I was a judge, and so with other people. With the German names, with the foreign names, actually, since we're having a harder time finding them, we're actually producing the names and just trying to find students around campus to judge those.
That question's an interesting one. In fact, you find that people in my generation have a very different semantic space for names than someone in his generation, and people from different regions also do. And these were Utah people, for the most part, who were doing the ratings. So, and that's why the Eastern names come out as not as attractive, I think.
Yeah, that's why I was asking the question.
Yeah, and we're hoping to kind of, you know, spread this out a little bit more, so to get more, especially, you know, different generations of people to see how they view names. Obviously, you know, I have an understanding of what I think is popular, which is differs very greatly than, you know, Dr. Brown's generation. So, it's a process.
It's kind of a first pass to get the methodology down, and then we're going to go back and do with more systematic names, going to the databases in each of the nations and find out what the most common names are, et cetera, and then get different kinds of people doing the responding.
So, any other questions? Yes?
Just a comment. If you find some folks who lived in Texas to be judges, for example, you might find that Billy would be a fine girl's name. Lynn might be a very fine man's name.
Well, exactly.
Quite a bit different.
So like you said, we're just trying to, you know, expand it, get the methodology down so we know what we're doing, and then, you know, expand it some more. So.
Are you able to develop a set of rules or calculations of the cycle time based on time and place for the use of family names when they go out of favor and then come back into favor?
Our database is much too... it's a convenient sample rather than a really systematic sample. We'd have to have a good systematic sample to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
I see one practical example of this might have a practical use. Of the thousands of names I've submitted to the template, the most often problem that I have done is incorrectly listed the sex and of an individual. If there was some way before it was submitted to the temple, either in temple radio or in another program, that would say, are you sure that's a male? Are you sure that's a female?
Yeah.
That would be, I would find that to be a big help. In fact, because of all these problems, I've had to limit the amount of names that I submit at one time. There was a early time when I would submit 150 to 200 names at a time for temple work. But now I have to submit smaller batches because of the error process that is in me inherent to, you know, was it female, was it male? You know, when you do lots of names, the chances of making a mistake are greater.
Yeah.
If you just stay with German names, it'll solve that problem for you because they require that the names be discriminated by gender.
Yes. You know, and I'm also finding the same thing when I was putting together some of the French names. There was Marie showed up. The same spelling in both male and females. And at first, when I was putting the data together, I thought for sure the person that had done this genealogy was completely wrong. But luckily, I speak French, so I went to some websites and looked up the name to make sure that it was just male-specific. And, you know, sure enough, it was both male and female with the same exact spelling. So, yeah, that's a really good point. Thank you. Any others?
Right. Just one quick question for me. What was the most interesting or surprising result that you found?
I think the most surprising especially came in the American names with that 1820 names being viewed as more popular and more attractive. And you're seeing that these names are coming back, you know, and it's not, you know, the direct generational, it's several generations back. You know, I never would have thought that, you know, Emma would be, you know, viewed as modern. I would have, you know, seen that as a very old name. Yeah, there you go. So, thank you.
Okay, let's thank our speakers. Yeah.